Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Thinking big thoughts so you don't have to.
Another day.
Here's John Williams.
Another dollar. This is John. We're in the Allstate Skyline Studio until 3. How are you? What a nice day in Chicagoland. Hope you're having fun. Remember on social media, WGN King John. Interesting post just went up on our Facebook page. On all platforms, WGN King John. That's me. We'll get to this in a little while. We are asking you on my Facebook page a couple of things, and one of them is, actually, Griff, I'm looking at the news clip. The thing we just put up on Facebook is stupid stuff that you may have done, a la the woman from Dixon, Illinois, who let her kids ride around on the roof of her car inside an inflatable swimming pool. She took the pool somewhere to get it inflated, maybe a gas station, fills up, and then she's got a big old giant swimming pool. She puts it on the top of her car. It's like the size of a car. How am I going to keep that from blowing off? She puts her kids in there, and then she drives home. Cops sees it, and lo and behold, she gets arrested. At that time, a young man was in the squad car as an intern, and his eyes are as big as saucers because he can't believe what he's seeing as an intern and how the cops are handling it. His mother listens to our show and commented on my Facebook page. Well, there's an interesting insight. But I said, I think, A, this is the kind of thing guys usually do. I mean, this is always Mr. Yeager from Dixon, not Mrs. Yeager from Dixon. Too many men's last words are, here, hold my beer. Men do dumb stuff like this. Women don't. Sorry, guys, if I'm painting with a broad brush, but I'm kind of right about this one. So here's a lady going down the street. Now, I'm hopeful that, just for the sake of humanity, that this story isn't as stupid as it sounds or looks, that she was going 2 miles an hour, and it was just a few blocks, and I don't know, but somehow it's not as bad as it sounds. But I'm not sure that it is. But I did ask you, in essence, on my Facebook page, I'll bet you did something dumb like that, and I'm recollecting the time that we rode home from Little League in the back of the coach's pickup truck, bouncing around like a bunch of Labradors, not a care in the world. That seemed to work out okay. I'm not advocating for any of this. I'm just saying, there but for the grace of God go some of us. Lady, what were you thinking? And she was probably thinking, okay, stupid, we'll survive, and I sure hope I don't get caught by the police. She got caught by the police. So we'll continue to follow that story. But your comments about stuff you've done like that are welcome on my Facebook page. I'm WGN King John. I suppose you've been hearing about the story about Todd Ricketts. He's the co-owner of the Chicago Cubs. He's also the finance chair for the Republican National Committee, and he's got a fancy swell house in Wilmette. That's no surprise. But the way he's maybe dodging his fair taxes on that property is the sort of thing that makes us crazy. The Cubs brand just keeps going down. These people cannot get out of their own way. This is not Tom Ricketts, the chairman, but Todd's on the board, and the Ricketts name is synonymous with the Cubs. You think that Tom would call his brothers and dad and sister and go, now look, everybody, would you just stop screwing up, for crying out loud? It's hard enough to
family meeting.
Family meeting. Even Dave Kaplan is moving to the back of the Cubs bus these days, so they don't need stupid stuff in the news. They started out before they played a first game with the whole Tribune full of dumb Cubs stuff. Now this, and I mean, this isn't fair to the Cubs. It's just this guy who didn't want to pay his property taxes, but it's the brand and it's bad. Number two, billionaires who cheat to save what to them is just a fraction of what they have makes me crazy, right? In this case, Todd Ricketts is to money what Mike Madigan is to voters. You cheat when you already have more than you need.
Yeah, it's not like he can't afford it.
That's the thing that makes me crazy. It's like I do anything I can or would do anything I can. My condo association hired an attorney to see if we could get our property taxes loaded. None of us are billionaires. If you're a billionaire or a multimillionaire and you can hire an attorney and save $8,000, I don't know, really? Maybe you ought to just lump it because you're a billionaire and pay $8,000 more in property taxes. There is a conversation to be had about how just because your home is worth more, you should pay more. I do think at some point we could cap property taxes. You don't necessarily use more services because your house is bigger. What are they going to send, two fire trucks? I mean, really, should you pay more? At some point, I think just because you're rich doesn't mean we should take more of it. But I don't think billionaires trying to save $8,000 are the one to lead that charge. Hal Dardick's reporting in the Chicago Tribune about this has been predictably very good. He's sitting next to me. Hi, Hal. Welcome to the show.
Good to be here, John.
What do you want to say? What do you want to say, Hal?
Well, I think what's interesting about this particular story is that a lot of people appeal their property taxes. Nothing wrong with that. You have the right to do it. In this case, he tore down a couple of homes and built one much larger designer, beautiful home with all the accoutrements.
And it was newer, obviously, which also adds to the equation.
It does. The size and the age and the location. The location is the same, obviously. So it should have been worth significantly more. It continued to be assessed at the lower level. Not only did he go into the board of review and say, okay, now this other house that turned on is just a side yard. That was legitimate. But he said he appealed it based on the old house that had been torn down. So the lawyer that represented him submitted a picture of this old house and said you should value it like this old house was valued, which is at the very least disingenuous.
So he gets the tax bill and then appeals the tax bill using the information from the old smaller house that he tore down.
Correct.
I mean, to me, that's strike two in a way. You know, in my world, if you're a billionaire, just pay the fair share of whatever they assess it at. I guess you can fight it. He does. But then his attorney turns in information that reflects the older house, to which he says, oh, I didn't know that. That was a mistake. If a mistake was made, it was an honest error.
Right. That was the comment that his spokesperson gave to us. He said,
Is that credible?
I don't know. I'm not that kind of guy that has that kind of wealth. And do you look at your bills? Do you let someone else handle that stuff? But I got to think you have some sense of what your taxes are and that maybe they're a little low.
Well, and doesn't the attorney representing you know what he's representing? It's a physical structure. The old house is not like the new house. If you're turning in a picture to go with it, does this guy not know what the house looks like that he's representing?
It looks, I don't think he did necessarily. He pulls the picture off of a database that the assessor uses, doesn't go out there, apparently, and I don't know, you know, let's surmise he didn't go out there and look at it.
Right.
So he thinks this house is still there for whatever reason. I don't see any advantage to this attorney who's, by all means, well-respected, to bother with trying to save a few thousand dollars that he didn't think was accurate. So I'll give him the benefit of the doubt.
Right. You know? So the attorney could legitimately try and reduce the property tax for him, but you know, it's the same billable hours. There's no need to turn in fraudulent information.
No.
Inaccurate information.
No. They usually get a percentage of the amount of money saved. So.
Okay, so maybe there is a little motivation, but just talking about a very small amount of money here. It's not worth it.
Well, we are. It's pizza money for the Ricketts, and I don't imagine it's a ton of money for the attorney.
So what happened? And is the flaw in Fritz Kagi's office or Joseph Berrios' office, famously before him? I mean, that's why we have Kagi, not Berrios, in office now as the assessment of properties in Cook County. Is this a screw-up at the assessor's office?
Oh, I think that there's a lot of people that are culpable in this matter because the assessor's office should be, once the new house is built, going out there and doing an inspection and determining the square footage and the amenities that the house has, the number of bathrooms, things of that nature that determine its value. Didn't happen in this case. For some reason, there was a miscommunication between the village of Wilmette and the assessor's office, and so that inspection was never triggered.
What a coincidence. How lucky for them.
Yeah, well...
How lucky for them that they built a 5,000-square-foot house in Wilmette, and they never got around to assessing that house, which would probably be paying over $30,000 a year in taxes.
Yeah, almost.
And
certainly.
They dropped the ball on that.
Yeah, well, there is evidence, and the people I talk to that have been doing this kind of work for a long time say this isn't an isolated incident.
I
think what makes it different is the fact that they appealed it based on the fact that it was still the old house. So that was an affirmative representation by the owner and his attorney.
Somebody wanted to. You may have a question or comment about this. Al, you're on WGN Radio. What can I do for you?
Well, I had some strong reactions to this. I think it's fraud based on the Tribune article because he didn't tell the assessor's office that he had a new house. Tore down the old one, put up a new one, failed to disclose it. For as I'm concerned, it's fraud. Now, he has to disclose something. I am a Sox fan.
A lot of happy Sox fans after that story was published.
Yeah, but I mean, address the first part of his comments. Is it fraud because doesn't he have an obligation to make sure he's representing it truthfully?
Yeah, I'm you know, loath to use that word, but I will say that there is an investigation being conducted by the Board of Review. They, of course, as the authorities that consider these appeals, could refer it to someone else. I'll leave that determination.
Right.
To
but
others.
Todd Ricketts could make this go away. Just write a check for $8,000, whatever the difference is between the $22,000 he paid and maybe the $35,000 he owes. So come up with $13,000 and it goes away.
Right. And interestingly, they're going to reassess the property and they'll send him a bill likely for this year and three prior years. But even then, it wouldn't make up for, I don't think.
Oh, that's right. That's 1 year.
Because it was just going on for 9 or 10 years.
Okay, yeah. So 10 years times, say, $13,000. So $130,000. Whatever it is, I'll bet he's liquid enough he can come up with that kind of coin.
Yeah, there was another wealthy guy. I think he's the governor, did something like
well,
that.
Well, Producer Griff says a lot of people are calling in right now saying, where have we heard this story before? That was infuriating. And if you and I are talking about it the same way, tell me if my understanding of it is right, as they were renting. And by the way, in the case of Ricketts, he had a house, he bought the lot next to him, tore them both down, so that now with a bigger lot, he can make a bigger house. Well, right. The governor had a house, Rauner did, and then, it was Rauner or Pritzker?
Pritzker,
and then he has another house, right? And
so he had another house across the street that he was rehabilitating.
So he pulls the toilets out of the one.
Right, the toilets were removed.
Now the house is in not habitable.
And the inspector general in that case used the word fraud.
Unethical. A lot of things. Yeah.
But Pritzker promptly paid the money back, yeah. And it seemed to go away as a campaign.
Here again, you're a zillionaire. And this shenanigans saves you tens of thousands of dollars, which any of us would love to do, but none of us can afford a $25,000 tax bill to begin with. I mean, if it was apples to apples, it would be like, I know, let's maybe break the law, certainly do something that's around the law, right? It defeats the spirit of it, and we'll save $100. I mean, that might be the equivalent to you or me or anybody listening. We're not billionaires. But billionaires will do that sort of nonsense to save thousands of dollars, which to them is you know, there should be somebody saying, hon, I know we can save $10,000 if we pull the toilets out or if we turn in the wrong picture, but let's not do that. It's not worth it, right? The shame or the crime is not worth it.
Well, you would think so, and he is a public figure in the sense that he's co-owner of the Cubs and he's finance chairman for the Republican National Committee.
Touche, Hal Dardick. He writes in the Chicago Tribune about this. You may have seen it. Cubs co-owner Todd Ricketts' property tax appeal under investigation after Tribune finds assessment problem. If you do not already, today would be a good day to subscribe to a newspaper. Hal Dardick, thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
It's 1:20 on WGN. Back to my Facebook post and dumb things you and I have done, like that lady in Dixon. Amy said, hi, John. My son's doing an internship in Dixon in the summer with the police department, and he was with that officer that pulled that lady over who was driving down the road with the pool on top with the kids in it. He was shocked at her decision. He is learning how many people make stupid decisions. There's an education for you, kid.
I have a pretty bad one, but I blame it on me being a kid making the bad decision.
Go.
Does that count?
Let's hear it.
When I was little, we had a go-kart up in New Buffalo at the property that my family has. And I thought I was so good and I knew the ground so well. I was like, I'm going to close my eyes going down this straight path through these grapevines. Don't drive with your eyes closed. I ran into the post and I was quite injured.
Oh, no. Hold on. I'm writing this down. So when driving a vehicle, keep eyes open?
Open, yeah. Open. Don't think that you know the area so well. You can do it with your eyes closed.
Do you remember how fast the go-kart went or was going?
Oh, well, I kind of took off like a drag racer, but, you know, it's only a go-kart, so it was maybe...
20?
No, probably not even that fast. Maybe I probably hit a post while going about 50. 10, 15.
60?
No, 70. Definitely not.
Oh, that's horrible.
Yeah, it was very dumb. Very dumb.
I think this is a conversation, though. I'm surprised you have one like that, Lauren Lapka, because I think it skews older, right?
Well, Bennett actually, before he left, after doing Steve's show, suggested that he could see the circumstance where the kids were begging the mom to let them do it, and she's like, no, no, no. And then, well, it's just down the block, maybe. We hope. Again, we don't know, but we hope all these things are true, that she's going slow and it's down the block. And she finally succumbs and then gets pulled over, like, as soon as she takes off.
Sound.
That's the only way I can imagine it. I'm maybe cutting a lot of slack.
I am, too.
In the comments on Facebook, people are cutting significantly less slack.
They are.
They're not thrilled with her decision.
Every now and then you'll see the video of a dad. Again, it's usually a dad driving down the road with the baby on top, right? Like, you're getting into the car, you put the baby, which is in the car seat, on top of the car, then you put your coffee in, then you get in and you forget to put the baby back in the car, and you're going down the road. Stuff like that happens. And then you say, oh, God, what a stupid decision, but you didn't mean to do it on purpose. Yeah, you really think the lady knew what she was doing here. Bill on Facebook said, so since you're opening the door, I'm going to walk right through it. I just had this conversation with my wife. I remember when I was 10 years old and I had a paper route, and every weekend I would knock on the doors of people I barely knew and ask for money for the newspaper. It would be nothing for me to walk around town with hundreds of dollars on my person as a 10-year-old. I'm not sure that qualifies as stupid, but boy... times have sure changed. This conversation's continuing on my Facebook page. I'm WGN King John. Real quick, yesterday we also talked about the TV series that Netflix has. Maybe you've watched it. It just dropped. Brendan and I finished it, Stranger Things, Season 3, last night. Good series. I won't tell you how it ends, or at least I'll try not to. But it did make me... sometimes he just says the wrong thing. But... it did make me think about ways I don't want to go. And my list is number 3, all-time way I don't want to go, those cockroach-like critters from the movie The Mist, or Mist, Griffin. What was the title of that movie?
The Mist.
The Mist. Number 2.
Not to be confused with The Fog. Also a great movie.
Number 2, I don't want to go via any of the creatures from Aliens or Alien or whatever, you know, those little things that are hanging in the roof. And then the number 1 way I don't want to go is the monster, the Flayer, from that show. That is really bad. I mean, because it's just so ucky, and it's violent. I mean, it's a really awful, bitey,
sucky creature. Wouldn't spoil, and now I know that it's ucky. Thanks a lot. Now I know that it's going to be really ucky.
Those are my top 3 ways I don't want to go. I asked Griffin to compile the list of ways he doesn't want to go. Go.
Right now?
Yeah.
All right. Oh, under the gun. Okay, boy, a woman in Scream gets caught in the doggy door of a garage.
Right.
And then they open the garage.
Yeah.
And I believe that ends up slicing her in half. Okay. That's a theme on my list, is getting cut in half.
Is that number 3 or 2 or 5?
Unranked list. Okay. The Joe Pesci gets beat with a baseball bat in Casino. That's number 1. It is ranked now, and that's number 1. The Beatles in the Brendan Fraser movie, The Mummy. I don't know if you remember that. They get under your skin and crawl.
Oh, yeah, right.
Didn't love that.
That's right. That was really bad.
And I think that's mainly my list. There's a movie called Under the Skin with Scarlett Johansson where she seduces men and brings them back to her house, except when she opens the door to her house, it's just an unending black layer where you can't see anything. And then she, I think, eats them. She's an alien.
Well, that's a bad way to go. I thought you had one more decapitation one for us, though, or somebody getting cut in half, no?
In Walk Hard. I don't have time to play that clip. Can we save that for later?
Okay. But you also have, on your list of ways you don't want to go, being cut in half.
In the movie Walk Hard, the Dewey Cox story, Dewey cuts his brother in half with a machete.
Which is a bad way to go.
Top to bottom or side to side?
Side to side.
Okay.
Okay. Well, I think we'll hear more about that later. I'm
almost sure of it.
I need to play that.
Phil Vitale is the restaurant critic for the Chicago Tribune. He's testing the food taste of Chicago. He'll say hi to us in a couple of minutes. And then we'll ask you about the Chris Bryant Anthony Rizzo gloves that are going to go up for auction, the 1-2 punch in the final out of the 2016 World Series. Would you give $750,000 or take? Would you spend $750,000 on that? We'll talk about all of that after the news. It's 1:37 on WGN. Phil Vitale is the restaurant critic of the Chicago Tribune. Today's Wednesday. He normally joins us at this time in studio, sometimes on the phone. He's on the phone today, but just for a minute. Phil's working hard on the story of the food at the Taste of Chicago, of course. Hi, Phil. How are you?
Hi, John. I am warm.
You hear how? I don't know if you knew this, but the forecast calls for it to be pretty hot today.
The forecast is correct. I should be on my second shirt by now, but I only packed the one.
Where are you?
I just got back to the office, so I did a first round of eating, and I'm uploading pictures and jotting down my thoughts. And
anything? We'll wait to read and maybe talk to you later. By the way, you sound like you're jogging along the lakefront, Phil.
No, but I am a little dehydrated, and I keep coughing to get to be able to talk properly.
Mm. Well, then I won't keep you. Was there one thing that stood out at the Taste today?
Yeah, there's a Caribbean restaurant called Garifuna Flava. It's the restaurant is down on 63rd Street. They have a couple things I like. They have these panades, which are kind of like fried empanadas, very small. They're piping hot and very nice. But also they're known for their jerk chicken. But today, or at Taste of Chicago, they're doing jerk chicken tacos.
Oh, that sounds good.
It's good, and it's really easy to share, and it's a lot less messy to eat than a jerk chicken plate with beans and rice. So I'm really recommending the tacos because it's a perfect walking around food, and you get a little of that jerk chicken flavor in a much easier format.
Yeah, that's critical, I guess, when you're doing an event like this. And what's the name of the restaurant? What's the booth I'm looking for?
It's Garifuna Flava, and it's booth 2, I want to say. At Taste of Chicago, booth three. So it's one of the closest booths to Monroe Drive.
Well, 3 is a lot easier to remember than Garifuna Flava or whatever.
Yeah, that's
the name
true.
Of the place
it's
is.
True. Yeah, point to booth three and get the tacos.
That's all we need to know. Hey, I want you to hydrate.
Thank you. I want you to stop doing
whatever it is you're doing. Go write your article, and we'll talk to you another day.
Appreciate it, John. Thank you.
Bye now. That's Phil Vitale, restaurant critic at the Tribune. Photos and reviews going up online.
He needs to put his head between his legs, lean over a little bit.
Dude, what he's doing?
Poor guy.
I'm at work. I'm like, what do you do for a living? It sounds very strenuous.
Well, he's been walking around the park in the 95-degree heat.
Yeah. He said he was inside, though. It sounded like he was still out there.
He just got back, yeah. Once you get that, you start to see stars, and all of a sudden everything tastes good.
$750,000 is what they think the Chris Bryant Anthony Rizzo glove is going to go for. Does that just sound high to you or low? Does that sound about right?
It sounds high.
I don't understand that. That's just a world I don't understand. I mean, that's pretty cool. You know, the Cubs hadn't won the World Series since dinosaurs roamed the earth. It was a big deal. And they all remember Chris Bryant fielding that ball at third, smiling, stumbling a little bit, almost celebrating too soon, then throwing the ball to Rizzo. He catches it after that amazing Game 7. I mean, that's a cool thing, the two gloves that ended that drought. That's a good thing. However, for $750,000, you could get a nice house and a lake house and a brand new car. And what would you rather have? A lake house, a nice house, and a new car, or those two baseball gloves.
You could also do some damage at it, like a dollar menu at McDonald's, say.
Just pull up and go, I'll have everything forever.
75,000
Happy Meals.
Junior cheeseburgers.
You could.
You couldn't get a full Happy Meal. You couldn't get 75,000 full Happy Meals. I want to be clear.
We did look up what the all-time top-ranking sports memorabilia items ever sold were. what name is attached to the most expensive item of sports memorabilia ever sold? Anybody want to guess?
Babe Ruth.
Babe Ruth is correct. His 1920 jersey sold for $4.4 million. That Honus Wagner baseball card that is famously famous is number three on the list. The 1909 Honus Wagner baseball card went for $3.1 million to a guy whose wife said, what? The number two most expensive thing, just right in the middle. So, you know, Honus is three and Babe Ruth's jersey is one. Number two is, and this is the thing I would, of the top ten, like to have. James Naismith's 1891 Rules of Basketball, $4.3 million. Not great literature, but still, what an interesting historic document.
That's pretty cool.
He wrote the 13 Rules of Basketball in 1891 to entertain athletes at the International YMCA in Springfield, Massachusetts.
There were 13 rules?
He needed.
That's really funny.
Times have changed. That was before instant replay, by the way.
Was one of those rules concerning the luxury tax or the...
He did not anticipate where the sport would go.
Protected picks.
Somebody's been listening to NBA podcasts.
I have.
Number four, Mark McGwire's 70th home run ball. Sammy Sosa doesn't make the list. No Cubs do. Number five, Paul Henderson's 1972 jersey. Canadians have dominated ice hockey since the beginning of the sport, but who helped the sport and individual teams reach the status they have? One of those players is Paul Henderson. 1972 jersey went for $1.25 million.
That's what I was wondering about the list. Is it's for Babe Ruth to top it? It seems like the game of sports memorabilia, if that list is right, is dominated by Americans because.
There are some soccer things from Europe, but not in the top six, obviously.
Yeah, I guess if they make the top ten, then it's all in the same boat. But you think, you know, as wild as people go for soccer around the world.
Right.
And there's plenty of billionaires overseas.
Pele's cleats or something like that.
Oh, yeah, or yeah, in Europe or...
How about, was it like just...
cricket stuff or
who
something?
Who was the U.S. women's soccer star who ripped off her jersey when they won the World Cup?
Was it Jessica
Chastain?
Yeah.
No, not Jessica Chastain, which would have been interesting. Who? What was her name?
Mia Hamm.
I would imagine that jersey would, you know, fetch a dollar or two. I'm just trying to think of things in the soccer world that we remember because as big as the moment is, what do you auction off when Michael Jordan hits a shot? You know, they don't generally save the basketballs like home run balls. I guess it would be his Nikes or his jersey. But
nothing from Jordan.
Anything
that he touched all game.
I guess so, yeah. I know somebody who had a half a sandwich that Richard Nixon ate, and that was in their freezer for several decades. You know, just if they touched it, it's important. But I digress. Number six, Babe Ruth. He's in there again, 1923, first Yankee Stadium home run bat. Babe Ruth's 1923 first Yankee Stadium home run bat. That's kind of cool. Who'd have thunk? That went for $1.265 million. Brandy Chastain. Number seven, Sheffield Football Club rules, regulations, and laws. So here we go. There's your soccer. Number eight, Muhammad Ali, Floyd Patterson, fight gloves. Very good. That's, you know, with Muhammad Ali's name on it, even as a person who's not entertaining this kind of spending, yeah, I think that would be pretty awesome. Hey, kids, put those down. Bobby, quit hitting your sister with the Muhammad Ali gloves we paid $1.165 million for. Number nine, once again, Babe Ruth. His 1919 Yankees contract. Went for just under $1 million. And finally, number 10, the FA Cup went for just under $1 million. The Football Association Challenge Cup, the English Soccer Cup, went for just under $1 million. So I guess the point is that if on the list of the top 10 items, number 10 is just under $1 million, and the Rizzo Bryant gloves are expected to go for $750,000, that's getting up there in the world of you know you have too much money when you spend, you know, $1 million on Babe Ruth's contract. What are you going to do? Get it out and play with it? I just don't know what you do with that. And obviously, what you do with it is you display it. I guess, and you have it, and that gives you a sense of value or worth or possession that other people don't have. I don't understand it. Are there any other things in the Chicago universe, Lauren and Steve Bertrand, that resonate like that? That people would go, boy, I'd sure like to have that. Remember when Sammy Sosa hit that home run? I'd want the bat. But all of the Sosa stuff is, right?
Right. So in sports, something Chicago that we would want?
No, I'd entertain other fields, but sports seems to be where the money gets thrown away.
Chemical engineering.
What about the Sosa corked bat? Any interest in that?
Maybe, actually.
Just the cork. I wouldn't want to take up too much space in my house.
I'll tell you what. If they had one of the moderating rods from the University of Chicago when they first split the atom under the stadium at the University of Chicago, if they had one of those boron rods, and I think that the value of those is a little higher, what with Chernobyl giving us that sort of crash course in physics and nuclear stuff. I mean, I would like one of those. Hopefully it's not still going, but I'd like one of those.
I would say a Lincoln item or something.
Abraham Lincoln, yeah. Maybe a hat or the gloves, right, or something like that.
Podium, I don't know if he debated behind a podium with Douglas. I don't think he did. But
you want? Oh, yeah, that would be good.
Maybe the stump.
Right. If they had the thing where he'd, you know, I don't know if there'd be value in an Obama thing. I mean, he certainly was a historic figure.
Maybe not yet.
I'll bet you Barack Obama's, the Bible that he swore on for the, or the Quran or whatever he did for his first swearing in. I'll bet that's, I'll bet I could get parking for that. Okay. 312-981-7200. I'm just looking for your help on this. 312-981-7200. Would you entertain that kind of money for the Rizzo Bryant glove? And what would you most like to have in Chicago memorabilia if money were no object? If money were no object. When you think, and you know, so you walk through the teams. I got to take a break here, but I want your input. 312-981-7200. Call or text right now. I'm also thinking about the 1985 Bears. That was a team that, of course, Chicagoans are unfortunately still having to celebrate. And I would imagine that a sweatband from Walter Payton or Jim McMahon or the socks that McMahon wore when he had a message to the commissioner might be worthy of some money. Anyone?
There's one into right center field. Blackman will cut it off. Going first to third is Chapman. And the AL to bust it open here in the seventh is James McCann, who hit 220 last year, hitting 316. That 96-point increase is the biggest in MLB this year, and he's an all-star. He's got a hit.
How can you not be happy for James McCann last night? Three Cubs in the All-Star game, three White Sox in the All-Star game. By the way, the White Sox tweeted this after the game. White Sox in the All-Star game, 1-for-2 at the plate, innings pitched, a strikeout, and 0 runs allowed. Cubs in the All-Star game, 0-for-5 with 3 strikeouts. This should count as the tiebreaker for the Crosstown Cup. The White Sox have to stop that. They're never going to grow their base if they keep looking over their shoulders, even when they're ahead.
It's kind of funny that they tried to make it cute at the end, but the message still was the same.
It's that same, we're never going to be as good as the Cubs, so if we ever get our nose ahead of them a little bit, we need to rub it in. It. Stop that, you guys. Mike, you're on WGN Radio. You're on the air. Hi.
Hi, John. How are you?
Good. Talk to me. What did you want to say?
Well, Griff thought it was funny, but the remains of the University of Chicago reactor pile.
Oh, I want that.
Are buried in a forest preserve in the southwest suburbs.
Of course they are.
Like they so are. Many other things.
As a matter of People. Fact, I believe it was the Tribune mentioned it last week in an article.
Are you serious? I can't believe I missed that.
I'm as serious as a heart attack, John. It's out in Palos Woods, and I can't remember exactly where, but it is all buried and encased in concrete and shielding.
Right.
And there is a marker at the site that says this is where the remains of the first sustained nuclear reactor are currently buried.
Okay, so I guess it's not good for souvenir hunting. It's still radioactive.
Yeah. But it is what it is.
Wow. So southwest suburbs in one of the forest preserves, maybe something like that?
Yes, it's in one of the forest preserves, and I can't remember exactly where right now. But 40 years ago, I was into orienteering, and we would be wandering the woods with a map and a compass, and we were told to make sure we stayed away from there because even though there's no hazard at ground level, you know, the remains of the reactor are there. And there is a marker.
How about that? I did not know what orienteering was, but I guess that's where you go out into a place and then find your way out?
Right, pretty much. Uh-huh. You need to stop at waypoints on the way to show that you actually navigated.
How about that? Hey, what an interesting call. Thanks for joining us today, Mike. I appreciate it.
You're welcome, John.
Have a good day. Griff, are people texting in about things of value? Is that what you're looking at over there?
Yeah, we actually had a call from Terry, but he said he didn't want to go on the air for some reason. But he has Dick Butkus's pool table.
I've always wanted Dick Butkus's pool table.
It was like the Seinfeld with John Voight's car. George buys a car because the guy told him that it was previously owned by John Voight. It's like, okay. Oh, yeah, there's a lot of stuff. Mrs. O'Leary's cowbell.
Oh, that would be good. That would be good. You know, they used to sell the seats at Wrigley Field. In fact, I have one of them, and then gave it to my son Grant, who's a baseball player, and then he ended somehow. Now I believe my brother Mark has it, and he's a big Cub fan. So those are a big deal.
Bobby Orr's Blackhawk sweater.
That's nice. That's nice. Obviously, another piece of famous, you know, Chicago memorabilia is the foul ball that was, you know, was not caught by a certain guy who will go unnamed when the Cubs were in the playoffs. That ball was eventually destroyed, though.
Somebody said the ball that Peyton was holding when he broke Jim Brown's rushing record.
Yeah.
Okay. Most people are just yelling at us for not knowing Brandi Chastain, so it's hard to filter through all those. I'm trying to
click, I said Jessica Chastain. How much do you people want?
I'm clicking through those. So just give me some time.
So, you're a little distracted now because with the phone lines lit up with people who can't believe that I said Jessica when I meant Brandi Chastain. I still, okay, but then what's the jersey worth? That was the point of the conversation.
Okay. Hey. Kisses of fire, burning. I'm at the point of no return.
Remember the movie Mamma Mia? Here we go again. This crazy guy was singing on stage.
In a landslide of emotion. I paid my share of love affairs, but they were nothing compared to this. Oh, I'm riding higher than the sky, and there is fire in every kiss. Kisses of fire.
Pagos Moutsourakis is in our studio. You saw him in the show, and he's in our studio. He's performing at Park West, but not like that, tonight here in Chicago. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for the nice introduction. And yes, tonight at the Park West, we will be bringing a little bit of Greece into the American culture. I and my friend Michael, who is a virtuoso soloist on the bouzouki, which more like is like a bazooka. It's a Greek pancho.
But you singing in that movie scene we just now saw.
Yeah.
Is that representative of how you sing?
No, I wouldn't say. I was asked to do a bad version of a bad singer.
I know, that's what I'm thinking. I mean, you could tell that this is a guy who's got a good voice. There's a couple moments there where you go, oh, no, he's good. No, wait, he's bad. No, wait, he's good. No, he's bad. It's like shtick almost. I would imagine in a major motion picture, especially with a brand like that, you'd want to be singing your very best so everybody knew what a great singer you are. But
yeah.
But that's not the character you're playing.
That was exactly what happened when, first off, I sent 13 different versions of how bad I can be. And I guess that's why they hired me. They were like, that guy really needs the part, so let's do him the favor.
No. That's not what happened.
And when I got there, my first thing was going into the studio to record the song. So I go in there, Al Parker, the director, is in the studio listening. I do a semi-good version.
Yeah.
And I get out of the studio. He's like, oh, that's excellent. And then Benny comes in from ABBA. And he's like, you should listen to that guy, how he sings Kisses of Fire. And they played back. And he's like, that's too good. Can you do a more Greek version? So I was like, yeah, I can.
A more Greek version?
A more Greek, yeah. More, less talented, more enthusiastic.
You said that, not me. So, Panos Mouzourakis.
Panos Mouzourakis
is in our studio. He's performing at Park West. So obviously he is a film star. He does TV. He's a singer-songwriter. He's also an artist. If you are in Greece, you know him. If you're in much of Europe, you know him. If you're in Chicago, you may know him because we have a very large Greek contingent in Chicago.
Yeah.
But I don't know. Maybe your fan base isn't just Greek. Maybe it's... will you be singing in Greek or English tonight?
I will be doing like 20% in Greek, and the rest of it is trying to get a little bit of the Greek essence. That's why I'm bringing the bouzouki with me, this amazing high-pitched Greek banjo. And I'm trying to implement it into songs into the American culture.
Sure, are you
covering
songs?
Frank Sinatra,
really?
But in a different rhythm, with a different sound.
Give me a song that you're doing of Sinatra's tonight.
My
Way?
When I was 17.
Yeah. It was a very good year.
Yeah, it was a very good year.
But you're doing it with that sort of Greek touch, with a bazooka.
Yeah, with a bazooka. With a bazooka. It's going to be exploding all over the place. We're doing Red Hot Chili Peppers. We're doing Bob Dylan. We're doing a lot of songs that you already know. We didn't want to tire you with all my original songs. We are doing some of my original songs.
Sure, you should.
In English.
You were in a cover band once upon a time yourself anyway, right?
Yeah.
Did I not read that on your resume? Sure.
Yeah, we
and
we
I wanted
did
to ask
the
you about
Uplift Mofo Party Band, which was a very nice... Red Hot Chili Peppers cover band.
What was the name of the band?
Uplift Mofo Party Band.
Uplift Mofo Party Band. Okay. There was also there was another name of one of your bands here that I thought was kind of hilarious. Let me see if I can find it.
Oh, the Αβάφτιστη Μικρή Πιτσιλοτήθρη Κολάπτες.
That's the one. That's... No, Auburn Small Picky Woodpeckers.
That's the translation.
So you were in a band called Auburn Small Picky Woodpeckers.
Yeah.
Why? I was
20 years old. I was experimenting.
With band names.
With band names.
You were also in a band called The Unacceptable. Okay, so, but then you became a singer-songwriter of your own, Mark, so then you were doing your own stuff as well.
Yeah.
And now you're in Chicago. Is this your first appearance in Chicago?
It's my first appearance in the U.S.
No kidding. Welcome to the U.S. of A.
Thank you very much. It's very nice to be here, and thank you for this lovely weather that you're offering.
He says as he looks out our 18th-story window over beautiful downtown Chicago, the river, the lakes over there and there, and there's our skyline. You will not find in your travels in this country a more beautiful spot than the one you are in right now. I can promise you that.
And I truly love the weather because being from Greece, the sun is always pretty very much appreciated. And I moved to Los Angeles like a year ago, hoping to see what I had in my childhood memories, the slow-mo Pamela Anderson in Baywatch, just walking down the beach. And the weather is over-advertised in Los Angeles. I'm waiting for the June gloom to get over, and maybe we will get some nice sunny weather as it is here.
Oh, you haven't had nice weather in L.A. either?
Because not yet.
Our May and June was terrible. What you are experiencing now is the first break we've had for nice weather in Chicago. It's been terrible.
I'm carrying it with me, because last year when I went to London for the premiere of Mamma Mia, it was the hottest it has been in London for like many years.
Yeah.
And I was enjoying it very much, and all the Uber drivers were like, we can't stand that. We don't have air conditioning here in London. We are not prepared for this kind of weather.
You were shooting, so you were in the sequel to Mamma Mia, right? Was Meryl Streep in that one as well? Were you able to?
Yes.
Who did you work with or around when you were making that movie?
Everybody.
The cast.
I had a scene with Cher. I had a scene with Lily James. I have, and in the green room, there was everybody. I was a little bit starstruck when I shook Meryl Streep's hand and Cher. So
what although
they were very, very nice. They were like, "Oh, lovely to meet you," and I was like, "Ha ha ha ha! Thank you. It is an honor," or something like that. I mumbled something. I managed to mumble something.
Yeah.
And but the most nice experience was when I landed there for my first shooting. After I recorded the song, I went for the fitting of the costume.
Yeah.
And as I'm waiting outside for someone to take me into the dressing room, I see through the glass window coming down the stairs James Bond, Pierce Brosnan.
Yeah.
And as he passes, gets out and passes me by, I'm pretending to play cool, and he stops, gazes back at me, and approaches, and he's like, "Oh my God, I saw your audition tape, and you're really excellent. Thank you so much for being in this movie." And I was like, "Mr. Bond, it's
a squeaky mess." Yeah, because what a great compliment.
Yeah, and it would be even greater if I had the brain power to respond at that time, but I just froze up.
I would imagine, I mean, so, you know, you have a resume that a lot of people would admire, but if you aren't used to working with the likes of Cher and Meryl Streep, I suppose any of us would start to stammer a little bit, right, around those kind of people.
Yeah. I mean, I'm a shy guy.
Yeah. Don't finish that thought. Now, you are also a judge on the Greek Voice, right?
Mm-hmm.
So is that like the Voice that we have here in the United States?
It's the same format involving a lot less money.
So they have singers from Greece who are trying to...
And although, I mean, we're a country of 10, 11 million people, and you can't compare to the talent that's out here.
Oh, really? So you don't have the...
There are some really excellent voices that we have over here, but we don't have the plethora of the talent that...
I suppose your country of 10 million, say, we're 330 million, so we got 33 times more people you do. Plus, Greece is... I don't know what your version of Hollywood or motion pictures or TV are there, but I know that Greece has had some financial troubles over the years, too, so I don't know if that sort of trickles down to awards for contest shows like that.
Well, first off, let me say I'm sorry, because I feel responsible for the financial crisis in Greece.
How's that? What did you do?
Because I started out really from nothing, and as my career advanced, and as I was going better in my life, everything else started falling apart.
Oh, so you were getting the money. In other words.
Yeah, it felt like that, but I was always had the feeling that I'm running on a bridge that's collapsing behind me.
Right, yeah. That's a very good metaphor. Very nice.
So when I got out of my first CD, piracy hit. Then all the MP3s were out there. Then YouTube came. When I gave one of my first interviews in a magazine, the next day it closed down due to the economic crisis. I hope that this radio station still is safe.
Right, because our weather's going to go in the toilet, A, because you're here, and B, we'll probably suffer a major economic collapse just as you leave town.
I think it's going to be when I get the Oscar. That's going to be the turning point where
you weren't
we're
nominated.
In trouble now.
You
he's got an Oscar. This is the second coming.
I want to ask you this, though. As a person who is... evidently from Greece, and must love that country, even though you've got more money than you're supposed to have. We go to Greece sometimes with listeners here from Chicago. I wonder if you would tell us what you think are some of the... I have to pause. Let's come back and answer this. What are the things an American must do when they're in your part of the world? What's the thing that we absolutely should do, or maybe the thing we should absolutely avoid? In a minute. So did you see Mamma Mia? Here we go again. Have you heard his recordings? Have you seen him on TV? His name is Panos Mouzourakis, and he is going to be performing at Park West tonight at 8:30, right? You'll be singing and playing
we have
the
no
bouzouki?
Opening act, Francesca, this lovely girl, starts at 8 o'clock. 8:30, we get on stage with Michael Paouris, this amazing soloist I can't say enough about. And we're going to rock the room for 3 hours.
You want to know more? ParkWestChicago.com. But answer that question I ask in a minute. In our studio, Panos, what are you doing, Panos? We're back on the air. Mouzarakis, he's this Greek guy. He is one of the judges on the Greeks version of The Voice. He's also got a small but very funny part in Mamma Mia, Here We Go Again. He sounds a little bit like this. Much better. This is much better than you in the movie.
Oh, yeah, but it's much more Greek also.
What are you singing about here?
That's life. That's the title of the song.
I see. That's very nice.
Yeah. Thank you so much. Thank you so much.
So, how do you spell your last name? Mouzourakis. Mouzourakis.
Exactly.
Panos. He's in Chicago. It's his first performance in the USA. He's at Park West tonight. He's this Greek fireball who was in Mamma Mia, Here We Go Again. Do you have a nickname, by the way? Do they know you as the something in Greece?
Well, it's Panos. It's Mouzou. It's, I guess those two. Panos is short for Panagiotis. Either way, so.
So give me your whole, and include your middle name, too. Do you have a middle name?
No.
Okay, well, you got enough syllables there. Give me your first and last name together.
Panagiotis Mouzourakis.
What if an American, what should an American do when they go to Greece? What should they not do when they go to Greece?
Well, I would say avoid any places that has a karaoke bar with screens that show baseball games. Because that's just a way of trying to lure you in and not get out of your comfort zone. So get out of your comfort zone, look for the nice beaches, look for the small villages.
We were in Athens. We were walking around shortly after we had arrived with a bunch of tourists. And as we were walking around the city, and it was just lovely. We were so loving it. And as we were walking around, the cabs were on strike at the time. So everybody's just kind of walking around. But I think it was hard on the restaurants and bars because they weren't getting as much traffic. And so as we would walk around, there'd be guys like you standing out front, good-looking guys. And they were saying things to us as we'd walk by. They would say, "Oh, mister, you look like American movie star. You are Tom Cruise. Come into my place." And it's like, oh, God, yeah, I said, "Do you really think I look like Tom Cruise? Come on, let's go get there and have some ouzo or whatever the drink is, right?"
Yeah.
But we're going someplace else. We have reservations. But wherever we go, we were just being so charmed. It was very fun.
I've been living 18 years there, and nobody told me that I'm a movie star. Well, I guess.
Okay, so avoid the places that look like a sports bar in America, because you can get that in America. What should an American tourist do when they're in Greece?
Well, probably the first landing station will be in Athens.
Yeah.
So Athens, Plaka, is a beautiful part of Athens that you can mix the ancient things and buildings and rocks and everything with very good food and very nice people and very nice drinks. There are some bars, I mean, like Clumsy's, that has been voted like one of the 10th greatest mixology bars, that's also near there in walking distance.
The name of this area is Plaka?
Plaka.
Plaka? Plaka?
Yeah.
Something like that. So tell the guy I want to go to Plaka.
So I would say that 5 days in Athens is enough to get a real good feeling of the city. And then just head on, pick an island. Every island has its own vibe. So if you're a party guy, I would say Mykonos and...
Santorini?
Santorini... is more like a couple's, I would say, more romantic.
Mykonos,
with
bring
sunrise.
Your bride. No, Santorini, bring your bride.
Yeah.
Mykonos, go find your bride.
Yeah, totally.
That's what I'm thinking.
And there are, my favorite places are Antiparos, And then in the Ionian, there's this small island that has only a beach and two taverns called Adipaxi.
Adipaxi.
Adipaxi. And it's like so small, but the water is like a swimming pool, so clear. So
you know, they talk about the Greek seas and that they're the most beautiful waters in the world. And so when the first time we were there, I thought, okay, this better be good. And it was. I mean, you just can't believe the colors, the clarity, and you want to swim in it. And I did, I mean, because I had an opportunity to, and I didn't want to miss it. So you're from Greece. Congratulations in advance for your performance this evening at Park West, parkwestchicago.com for tickets and information. 8:30 tonight. It sounds like fun to me. Panos Mouzourakis. Thanks for coming to Chicago.
And
thanks
Michael
for coming
Powers.
Into our studio. And Michael Powers?
Powers. Michael Powers. The power of Michael.
Next time you're in Chicago, come through. It's always a pleasure to talk to you.
This was such an honor and such a beautiful conversation. Sir John Williams, thank you so much for having me here.
And I look like a movie star.
Yeah, totally. Come inside to our taverna.
Exactly. We almost did. It's 2:28. The news is next. Well, here we go, some more with Panos. You know, there's a certain joy of life for that guy. I hope you enjoyed our conversation if you heard it with Panos Mouzourakis, because I don't know this guy. I don't know his music. I don't speak Greek. I didn't see Mamma Mia's sequel. I didn't see Mamma Mia, the first one. But he was a lot of fun to talk to. He was just like enjoying life. His description of being a wage earner of some note in Greece as akin to being running on a bridge that's collapsing beneath you is brilliant. What a fun guy. We're playing this in the studio for him earlier. His arms immediately go into the air. You know, doing that thing. Griff, I think I found my new ringtone. Hold on, I'll get it. All right, Park West, 8:30 tonight. Janos Mouzourakis. Thank you, Griff. Oh, that's right. That's the part, Griff, where you play a song for us and then tell us a little bit about it, and I just talked over anything you may have had to say. Are we good here? All good? All good. Rich Lankoff's in our studio, the attorney, the host of Legal Face Off. Hi, Rich. Welcome to the studio. How are you, sir?
I wish I had a Greek walk-up song. Might do that for our podcast.
That's it. I don't have occasion for a walk-up song. I guess every time I come into the studio, I could ask Ella for Griff, whoever's producing, to play my walk-in song, and that's going to be it.
And a variety of Mediterranean tunes.
And I'll just come in with my hands up, with my shirt buttoned down. And
break some plates.
The gold chains, and just got that whole Greek vibe going on. We asked you, as the attorney who frequently helps us with legal issues here at WGN Radio, again, the host of Legal Face Off and a partner in the firm that is not written down in front of me.
Bryce Downey and Lenkov is the name of that firm.
He is in our studio to answer a couple of legal questions. The other day, let's start with the maybe least serious of them. We got into a debate about what the appropriate penalty should be for the guys that vandalized the Bean in Millennium Park. We made it the news click yesterday, and here's what we had. A year in jail for the Bean vandal would be A, too harsh, B, the right punishment, or C, not enough. And we were split a third, a third, a third on that, pretty much. That is, as many people said that a year or more, actually two-thirds of our listeners said a year or more is an appropriate penalty for the guys that vandalized the Bean. What do you think about that?
Well, they have been charged, as you probably covered, with a Class 4 felony, which, in fact, is punishable by 1 to 3 years in jail here in Illinois. The degree to which you are charged with felony depends on the amount of damage involved. So in this case, the standard for the lowest felony, again, the Class 4, is between $300 and $10,000. Up until that point, it's a Class 4 felony, and then there are sliding scales above that. So, in fact, the judge in this case, Judge Navarro, said that he wasn't sure yet when he charged them how much damage was involved. That was still before they cleaned it up. they could, the assistant state's attorney said that they could charge him with a higher felony if it turns out that the damage was greater. It turns out that they cleaned it up, and I think it's below that threshold.
I don't think it costs $10,000 to clean that, or correct. The cancer survivor's wall that Lurie has, but say it's less than $10,000, then it's a year to three.
Correct,
is the sentencing
plus a fine, up to $25,000 fine.
But they could charge them with less,
sure.
too, right? I mean, that they don't have to put him in jail for
of course. They can charge them. They actually did charge them with various misdemeanors in addition to the felony, and they can choose, as we saw, of course, in the Smollett case, to drop the felony count. Ironically, Smollett was charged with the same Class 4 felony that these guys were charged with. But, yeah, of course, they could choose not to. I think, and I mentioned the Smollett case because it's instructive, and it also speaks to our second case today, because you can't view any of this nowadays, especially given Kim Fox, especially given what's going on in our city, outside, strictly from a legal perspective. You also have to include the political factors.
Well, the mayor jumped into this.
Yes. Right? Yeah. So I think given the degree to which this has received now international attention.
And it has.
And the potential effect on tourists, I think the state's attorney will aggressively prosecute this case.
These, I said, were adults. And then I looked at the ages. They're 20, 21 years old. I don't know if that matters to anybody. They weren't 15. They're 20, but they weren't 35. But they're charged as adults in these crimes. I don't know. A year sounds like a lot to me, doesn't it, you?
Well, listen, you have to look at these sentences always from the effect that the prosecutor is trying to achieve. And of course, one of them is punitive always when you look at sentencing. You're also looking at the deterrent effect. And I think in this case, the deterrent effect is very important given the high profile target that they were, vandalizing. So I think if I was the prosecutor, and especially if I was Kim Fox today, given the amount of criticism she's received, I would aggressively prosecute these individuals.
I hate that, though, don't you? I mean, so why did these guys get a harsh sentence? Why were they prosecuted to the degree of the law? Because Kim Fox screwed up the Jussie Smollett story. Well, I don't know that one should impact the other, the politics or the previous case.
Well, you could say the same thing about why did Rod Blagojevich receive an unprecedented sentence that no one has ever received? The reason is because he's a high-profile defendant, and you're trying to achieve a deterrent effect. You're trying to send a message to others who may have the same thought.
Isn't that inherently unfair to that individual if somebody previously didn't receive the same treatment?
Well, guess what? You did the crime. I mean, there is discretion. There is prosecutorial discretion to charge, higher or lesser offenses. And they have that discretion just for this reason, as do judges, by the way. Judges have the same discretion in sentencing based on their desire to send a message.
So, Rich Lankoff, you are now going to do the news click. A year in jail for the Bean Vandals would be too harsh, the right punishment, or not enough?
Personally, I think it's right on point. I think that there are laws on the books for a reason. I've done some prosecution in the past, and I think that the laws are there, to send a message.
What does that say to the – I appreciate it. Pardon me for cutting you
off. Of course.
I think I get the point. But then what does that say to the next person who commits a crime that is arguably worse? You hit somebody and break their nose. I'll bet that person doesn't go to jail for a year. I'll bet a lot of people get away with stuff that we would say is worse than this, but they're not going to go to jail for a year.
Well, I mean, that might be. It's hard to compare, that to a graffiti case, but I think if you compare graffiti cases or vandalism cases to this one, the standard would be set going forward that we take that seriously. Maybe if you, spray paint your garage, it's not the same offense. But listen, this was, not to sound overly dramatic, but this was an attack on the biggest, most forward-looking, tourist attraction, arguably, in the city. And you have to take a strong stand against that, not only because of that specific incident, but the message it sends to others. So I think you throw the book at them.
Do you have a sense of what Kim Fox's office is going to do?
Oh, I think, again, given the political pressure they've been facing, given the negative public publicity for dropping Smollett, I think they will go after this case very hard.
Megan Kirpo is also writing in the Chicago Tribune about the criminal charges that have been dropped against a Chicago police officer. This is the story of a man who was beaten inside a cell or inside a hospital holding area. He is handcuffed behind his back. He was being hospitalized involuntarily, so he wasn't all that cooperative or thrilled about it. A couple of police officers put him into this room, and then the one officer starts to punch him with the right and then twice with the left. It's captured on video from two angles. There's another officer that watches it, and then seconds after the third punch is thrown, five hospital employees come in. It looks like maybe security or just technicians. I don't know if any of them was physicians. It's hard to tell. But five hospital employees come in, but they missed that. The man is now laid out on the bed in the room, but they didn't witness it. And they say that they do not have a good enough case to press criminal charges against the police officer because the victim in this case is not cooperating fully. Maybe you don't need the testimony of the victim when you have the evidence of the cop beating him. That's the story today. What's your take on that?
Yeah, great question. And the question really is how strong that evidence is. All of this always comes down to the degree to which you have strong evidence. The question is whether Kim Fox had enough evidence to successfully prosecute this police officer, who, by the way, was charged 3 years ago. This is not new. And she decided that she did not have enough evidence because, as you point out, the victim and his attorneys, allegedly, if you believe Fox, weren't cooperating. They weren't returning the calls. They weren't showing up in court. They, of course, say that wasn't true. So then you go to the next evidence. As you mentioned, there's a video. There's a very compelling video that anyone can look at that shows what happened. In addition, you have a second officer, the partner, who was willing to testify. So why would that not be enough? That's the question. The answer is, if you believe Fox, it's because that evidence, the video and the testimony, did not rise to a degree of, you know, reasonable, beyond a reasonable doubt. The video does seem compelling. On the other hand, you don't see contact made. The officer swings and there's a gap there, it looks like, at least according to the video. And the video is a little grainy. I think, personally, it's enough. I think that's enough evidence to convict this officer. Again, I don't think you can look at this case without considering the politics of it, especially in light of the letter that Fox received from the Chicago police, the FOP last week, criticizing her handling of any case involving police. So this might be seen as a way to get back in the favor of police by dropping this case.
Especially on the heels of the Smollett case.
Of course.
So here again, it's not the circumstances in that room. It's the other world of politics and police, maybe city hall relations, that lo and behold land in this cop's lap and save his butt, because he reaches back with his right and swings, but the angle of the camera is such that you don't exactly see the point of contact. And then the two lefts that he throw. This is a 6'5", 235-pound police officer wearing protective gear, and he's going at a guy who does not have any of that, is much smaller, and is handcuffed behind his back. And either that officer hit all three punches, or maybe he missed all three. But I'm not I think it would be extraordinary for you to believe that he missed all three punches point blank. I'll bet one of them landed. But you don't see the point of contact. Shame on Kim Fox for this reason, Rich. Maybe you won't win the case, but let a jury decide. Why is she deciding not to prosecute? Is it such a terrible thing to lose? At least represent the people. Come on.
To me, it's another bizarre decision by her office. Smollett was, you know, still incredibly hard to believe and still ongoing. I think this speaks to the fact that Kim Fox will inextricably be linked with Smollett for the entirety of her career. It'll color everything she does. And I think this is a good example of her maybe bending over backwards the other way, you know, in favor of the police, maybe in an effort to gain their favor back. She hasn't had a good relationship with the police since she started. So I think this might be a way to fix that. In her mind, it's wrong entirely. They should have prosecuted. But, you know, who knows what's going through her mind.
And if that's not what's happening, she's sacrificing the rights of this handcuffed individual in the name of improving the relations her office has with the police and maybe her mind the city. Maybe that's not the case, but it's what it looks like. You know, maybe that is what she's doing, which I find reprehensible. Maybe it's not, but it sure looks like that because she won't prosecute the case.
Yeah, and I agree. I mean, you know, the jury would be made up of people just like you and I who look at the video. And while you might not see him strike the alleged victim, there's enough circumstantial evidence there to convict. I mean, you know, someone walks in with an umbrella. You don't need to see it raining outside if you... know they're carrying an umbrella that's wet.
I want to know what Lori Lightfoot thinks about this rather than what she thinks about what should happen to the guys that painted the bean. I don't know that she sounded off on this, but this is one that maybe deserves her attention more than the other. Rich Lankoff is the co-host along with Tina Martini of Legal Face-Off. When's the next one drop?
We are taping our next one tomorrow. We've got our semi-annual Supreme Court roundups. We've got some former Supreme Court clerks talking about the most significant cases of the term that just ended. So it'll be pretty exciting for the legal followers of the world.
One of the nice things about Legal Face-Off, too, if you're not listening to it regularly as part of your podcast downloads, is that it moves along. There's a lot of things they address, and they cover a lot of ground with the same wisdom that you've just heard from Richland.
We're waiting for the king to come back on. You're always welcome.
I was on it once before, and I'll never do it again. I was over my head. It's nice to see you in the studio.
Thank you.
Producer Griffin, any text you wanted to mention to us before we wrap up the show today?
One, we keep coming back to the offhand comment you made about Brandi Chastain.
I thought it was about the White Sox, which I also need to address.
Oh, there's that too. Somebody texted in a picture of a newspaper story from just last Saturday in the New York Times. There was a story. The headline is, "The sports bra scene around the world has new meaning 20 years later." And a portion of that story, I think it's a little sidebar, and it says this: "The sports bra Brandi Chastain wore when she scored the decisive penalty to defeat China 5-4 in the 1999 Women's World Cup final is framed in her home office."
Oh.
She said she had been offered $500,000 for it shortly after that World Cup, but had turned it down.
Wow.
So there you go.
Wow.
Asked and answered. $500,000.
I wondered out loud if that was a bit of sports memorabilia on the heels of the story that the Chris Bryant and Anthony Rizzo baseball gloves are being auctioned off, and they expect they'll get $750,000. We looked at the list of top-ranking sports memorabilia items, some Babe Ruth stuff, some Muhammad Ali stuff, no Chicago really stuff there. And then we were just wondering what else would bring how much. I wondered about the jersey on top, not the sports bra, but $500,000 for it, and she said, no, thank you. Good for her. None of that makes sense to me. The other thing that I mentioned earlier, and I want to just go back to because I think I misrepresented the White Sox on this, but I'm going to pull it up on my phone, Griff, just to at least mention who did post this, because I think my point is still relevant here.
Right. You mentioned a tweet that compared the Cubs the Cubs performance in the All-Star game versus the White Sox.
Last night.
And I believe that tweet, and somebody called in and said it came from a NBC White Sox talk
with a blue check mark, so I'm looking at it now. It said, White Sox in the All-Star game, 1-for-2 at the plate, innings pitched, a strikeout, no runs allowed. Cubs in the All-Star game, 0-for-5, 3 strikeouts. This should count as the tiebreaker for the Crosstown Cup. And then I went on a little mini rant just about White Sox Nation, of which I'd like to consider myself a member now. Why? Because they're on our radio station, and I found out I really like this other team on the South Side. But I've been saying lately, don't be that. You're going to have enough momentum, enough talent, enough wins that you don't need to look over your shoulder and thumb your nose all the time at the Cubs just to present White Sox power.
Okay, but don't do the rant again. You're just going to get in all the same trouble again.
But I don't think I am, because I still feel that way. But I directed that at the White Sox organization because it says here White Sox Talk with a blue check mark, and it's got the logo there.
That's not the White Sox account, though. That's the mistake you made.
But there's also this little teeny NBC logo in there. And this is the White Sox Talk NBC Sports account. So that's NBC Sports trying to channel White Sox fans' vibe with a blue check mark.
So you could say that's run by White Sox fans and tell the fans not to say that if you so choose. But it's not what you were saying. It's not coming from the White Sox themselves.
Right, right. So I'll take that back, White Sox organization, NBC Sports. If you are representing some faction of the White Sox fans, I still think that's if I was leading the parade, I'd say, let's not go that way. Am I okay?
You're good now.
Okay.
And now we're good.
And now if I just hit this button, I'll be out of trouble. Speaking of no pain, here's Ro Khan.
Speak for yourself. What do you mean no pain?
And we're off.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Hey, Ro, how are you?
I'm fine. We had a show party last night, so.
You guys are always doing something.
I know. I mean, we are. I know. I don't even know why. It turns out we don't even like each other that much. After last night, they raided my bathroom last night.
I think it's because you sound like a good boss. Like if the show hosts are the bosses, you are always entertaining or doing stuff with your team.
And he cooked for us, John.
Holy cow.
Pretty good cook.
I have never done anything for my team of Elif. One of these days, Griff and Elif and I.
I think you've done enough for Griff. Let's just be honest. You probably have already done that. But in terms of, I get it. I mean, but we got our whole, we enjoy doing it because we're having so much fun on the air. We take it off the air.
Take it home.
And then look out.
What did you cook?
We did steaks and brats and vegetables and I don't know. I did not make the potato salad with coleslaw. It was a cookout.
Ro cannot respond to the following question. How's he cook? How's the food?
It was great.
I thought it was good.
Yeah, nailed it.
He almost lit the whole thing on fire, but, you know, it was good.
How many calls, how many complaints, Ro, from your little neighborhood?
My daughter actually called me today to complain that we were out there too long.
The building superintendent said something?
My daughter lives across the courtyard from me in another townhouse right next to mine.
Yeah.
And she texted me about halfway through the night, like, are you guys still out there? And I'm like, yeah. And I thought she was going to come over.
Could you turn it down?
Right. That was essentially what it was. And then she just called me about an hour ago. I was like, what time did you guys stop last night? And I'm like, I really cannot answer that question.
Wow. Wow. What are you doing on your radio show today, sir?
In the first hour, the Gator update. We'll get you all caught up on that.
Can I just ask you a question?
Yeah.
Do you think this is our top story? Like, Kim, is the Gator going to be your first story today?
I gave it serious consideration, but the answer is no.
I think
you have to stay tuned.
It's a lot of fun.
Listen, this is my favorite story of the year because it's something we can all get behind.
It is illegal in Illinois to own an alligator, so you know.
All right. Yes, I know. Okay. Well, it's illegal to do a lot of things in Illinois, but people still do them. The alligator is, to me, because we're all rooting for this alligator.
Yeah.
I hope it gets out of Humboldt Park. We want him to surface. We want him then to, take a victory lap, and we want him to go live his life on a gator farm or whatever the hell goes on there.
Gator farm.
Don't you think? I'm wondering what he's eating. Like, there's a bunny rabbit or a raccoon out there in his teeth right now going, you've got to be kidding me. Really?
Right. I moved to Chicago so I didn't have to deal with you guys. All right. Thank you very much.
Have a good show.
Thank you.